What's going on, guys? Dr. Danny here. I want to thank you so much for listening to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. One of the most common questions that I get is, how did you start a practice in a gym? And because of that, I've put together a course called the Gym PT Blueprint, which shows you exactly how to start, run, and grow a successful practice in a gym. If you're a new PT, if you're a new grad, if you're a PT that's just started a practice in the gym, you're not making more than $12,000 a month yet, this course is perfect for you. It'll teach you how to set it up correctly. It'll teach you how to market yourself correctly, how to sell correctly, you know, how to actually build a true business and not just a little side business that maybe doesn't take you anywhere and change you and your family's life long term. So if you're interested in this model of a practice, guys, head to drdannymatei.com/products and you can take a look at the Gym PT Blueprint and everything that goes into it at that location. Thanks so much for listening. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's up, guys? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast, and we're lucky to have one of my good friends, a social media wizard here in Atlanta, who owns Imagine Social Media Consulting. It's Chantel Cleef. If you haven't heard of her yet, you know, you should look her up. She's doing some awesome things down here, and we're going to get into all things social media. So she has a social media marketing company here in Atlanta. They believe in building relationships, not profiles. You know, Chantel is also one of the most organized people that I know in business. Seriously, the most organized person I know. I know why you're successful, because you always know what's going on. You always have these great apps and organizational, like little, like, was it Mixmax or whatever it is on email? Like, this is awesome. I don't know any of this crap. So I get to learn a bunch of stuff from Chantel. And she's also a great entrepreneur. I mean, she, at this point, has a very, growing company, has been a part of a previous company and a nonprofit. So this isn't somebody that's kind of new to the business world. So we're lucky we get an opportunity to learn from somebody like Chantel today. So Chantel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Danny. I have never been called a wizard, and so I appreciate that. That made my day.
Well, that's going to go on your LinkedIn profile.
Right.
I guarantee
social
you.
Social media wizard.
You will get so much more business if you just social media wizard it. People will be knocking down your door. But that's what we want to get into today, because, you know, we were kind of talking off air, but I mean, if you're listening to this and you're a practitioner, you know, you're a physical therapist, whatever, some sort of practitioner, and you know, you think that you're using social media correctly, you're probably not, right? Because if you look at someone's social media platform that has a physical therapy practice, they are probably doing too many platforms because they don't really know what to focus on. And B, they're really not getting anything from that social media presence. And what Chantel's company says, you know, is, you know, build relationships, not profiles. And I think that is really the beauty of social media. And if you can understand the, you know, the utilization of it, it can become one of the strongest ways to drive business and repeat business and connect with people long term. So what do you mean by that? You know, build relationships, not profiles. Like, how would you describe that?
Yeah, I would love to unpack that. So it is marketing. And an essential piece in marketing is telling your brand story and creating engaging content that people feel inspired by and want to be a part of. So we use an 80-20% rule, kind of break it down. And we kind of came up with this concept because we saw online so many people pushing product or services. And no one feels attached to that. I think something we learn from a group we're both a part of is experience shares. And so if you tell someone to do something, they're less likely to do it. And the same applies for social media. So you want to become a thought leader in the space. You want to provide value for everyone following you. And it's hard to do that when you're just trying to sell something. So we focus a lot on creating engaging content, relationally focused, you know, commenting on the pictures they're posting, liking the thing, you know, making sure you're following all of your customers and engaging with them so that they don't feel like you're just trying to make a sale and then move on with your day.
Well, you talk about becoming a thought leader, and I think that we're in an interesting time. Like, previously, in our profession at least, you know, you had to write a textbook, you know, or you had to teach at a university and do a lot of research. And now you can kind of become a thought leader by just being there all the time, right? Like video, social media, blog content, podcasts like this, right? And so what's your, in your opinion, is that a good thing, a bad thing? And how long does it take to become a thought leader, like realistically?
Well, I think it's amazing. I think we have so many tools at our fingertips now to learn and continue to grow and evolve that don't require, you know, checking a library book out or buying something and then having to read it. You've got so much great information in small tidbits and bite-sized chunks. So I think that it doesn't take very long to become a thought leader, as long as you're being authentic to yourself and your brand. So for your practice or, you know, practitioners in your space, in order to become a thought leader, I think they have to speak from experience and they have to speak with authenticity. They have to be true to their brand and their voice and their company culture. People, I think, can weed out very early on if someone's just trying to copy what everyone else is doing and not really speaking true to the experience that they have, you know, when you walk in the door. So to answer the question on the thought leader space, I think it can happen pretty quickly if your content that you're creating and pushing out there is on brand. And there's a lot of things that I think you need to do up front to figure out your brand and put thought into the voice, the messaging, what you're trying to relay, who you want to become, what are your goals and KPIs before you just start publishing content and putting so many posts out there.
So you think it's more important early on to get an idea of, you know, who are you trying to actually engage with and become a thought leader to than necessarily just kind of getting going and just start flooding the market with your ideas?
I mean, I think that you should probably approach it from both angles. I think it's extremely important to understand your customer personas. And so diving deep into, you know, if you're trying to reach someone, what are they interested in reading? What kind of car do they drive? Where do they hang out on the weekends? What is their purchase habit? And their, you know, where do they typically engage, whether that's Facebook or LinkedIn, like trying to understand their personality. So then you can say, okay, well, you know, I can relate to that person. Here's a piece of content that I think they would find valuable, and information that they can relate to. So I think you should understand your customer personas. I don't think you should, if you are a thought leader in physical therapy, I don't think you should try to be someone else and become a thought leader in something else if that doesn't come naturally to you and that's not a topic you're interested in talking about, because then again, I think the consumers will tell that it's inauthentic. So try not to be something that you are not.
Well, I love the idea of this, you know, kind of target audience avatar, right? Like, this is something that we, so just, you know, in terms of our company, when we write a piece of blog content or we do a video or we decide we want to get a message in front of somebody, it's because we've already figured out who that person is and what we want to say to them. And I think that took us quite a while to figure that out. And I mean, if you can take just one thing from this, if you can figure out who you want to talk to first before you go, you know, trying to figure out all these social media platforms, that will save you so much time and your message will be so much more, just kind of specific to the audience you're trying to actually help, whether that be a patient coming in or maybe, you know, for us, it's reaching people that are interested in business that are physical therapists as well. And the content becomes very, very directed to what they're actually wanting. So you talk about the idea of this target audience. And so, like, give us like the top three questions that, let's say you're a physical therapist and you want to figure out, all right, who should I be writing content for? So top three questions for creating your kind of patient avatar and what they should be.
Yeah. Well, to backtrack a little bit, I do think there's a lot of power in also naming those avatars and thinking, okay, marketing Mary, does she like this type of content versus this? I think top three questions that come to mind. So pain points is a big one. What is an everyday problem that this person faces, or what is, what area of, you know, what part of their life are they in? So do they have kids and, are they on a second job and do they own a house? Trying to understand kind of where they are at physically in their life or what part of their journey they're in, I think can provide a lot of power in then knowing how to speak to them and what type of content they'd be interested in reading. So pain points maybe being the first question. Age is a big one, and maybe that's an obvious one, but I think understanding your demographic, it's great to try to hit ages 18 to 55, But ages, you know, the 18-year-old is going to want to see and hear something and be receptive to something so totally different than the 55-year-old. So it's going to make your marketing extremely difficult, because then your consumer is going to see content that they're like, that doesn't feel right with me.
Right.
That doesn't sync well. So trying to be as granular as possible about their age and the demographic. So I think period in life, pain points, age, and then any other cues about their life. So what do they read? What do they do on the weekends? Those are some overall questions, but those are the ones that come to mind initially.
Basically common interests, right? So like, I mean, the age thing is huge. You know, the naming it has also, you know, also has been big for us too. And now when we write a blog post, like, we know who we're talking to. And it's not just blogs, but videos as well. And this kind of brings us to the content side of things. Because we've said content probably 10 times already. And you hear, oh, content marketing, content is key, content. There's just so much emphasis on content. How do you feel about people creating content and taking a look and a step back before doing so? How important is it to really have some sort of organization and sort of like content structure or calendar in place before you go and actually create all these kind of things that take a lot of time?
Right. Well, strategy. So I think it's the first step. It needs to happen before you start just trying stuff. I think if you can be strategic about knowing who you're trying to talk to, the frequency of how often you're posting, the best time, really try to lay that out and map that out, you'll be set up for success a lot better than many others. It's such an important piece that a lot of people oftentimes skip because they just want to get started. But in order to be successful on social media, there's the piece of consistency, so you can't just give up after a month, but then also the piece of the strategy. You have to be strategic about what you're saying and think through that customer journey. If you just start pushing stuff up, you have no idea what's working and what's not working because you don't have the strategy to back it up and test and trial and error.
So for now, I mean, you work with some medical field businesses and a whole bunch of different ones. Like, guys, this isn't some random person I brought for social media. This is somebody that works at big companies. So we're lucky we get an opportunity to even just like pick your brain for this. So when you look at what kind of the service business are actually doing, is what's more powerful for them right now? Is it blog content? Is it videos? Is it audio? Like, where do you see the most kind of return on people's investment at this time?
Yeah, that's a great question. Videos is huge. The audio component is becoming even bigger, which is why I'm excited to dive in with you into podcasting and kind of that as a whole. But video is great, especially on Facebook and Instagram. I'd say video, I'd rank number one. And there's also a lot of power in a beautiful picture that tells the story. So yes, iPhones take great pictures. Yes, you can get by with kind of behind the scenes, you know, office Snapchats, but a compelling picture that tells such a strong story can really speak volumes for your brand and your marketing.
That's a great point. And it kind of brings me to the social media platforms that are out there, right? Because there's, I lose track of, I mean, I sound old saying this, but like, I lose track of all the actual like platforms that are out there now. So, you know, for somebody that's in this sector, that's a service-based business, where do you think the top one or two platforms, or what are they, and where should people really be spending their time?
That's a great question. And I wish I could have kind of a blanket answer for that, and I will try my best. But it, again, largely depends on your demographic. So one practitioner may be trying to reach 50 to 75. And in that case, I'd say Facebook is probably the best option for you because it's been around the longest and that they've just started to adopt that. If you're trying to reach very active lifestyles, you know, 25 to 35, there's a lot of other platforms that I would suggest. I think Instagram's a key component. Instagram stories is something to leverage. Facebook is still important, but Instagram would be even a little bit more. If you're trying to reach the 16-year-olds, I'd say you've got to hop on YouTube and do it really quickly, and also Snapchat. So it's tough to blanket, you know, the top few platforms to utilize. My suggestion, knowing that, I would say start with two or one. Start with one or two and get really great at that. understand your content strategy, test things, see what's working, see what's not working. And then when you feel comfortable with that approach, hop onto another platform.
Well, what do you recommend that people look at the actual paid side of some of this, right? Because you know, we look at, especially, you know, Facebook and I believe Instagram is headed this way as well. Like the amount of people that may follow your page aren't necessarily the people that are going to see whatever it is that you're putting up. So you kind of got to pay to play in some way. When do you recommend that somebody actually start going that route to get their message in front of the right people?
You know, I actually recommend it from day one. And that's shifted over the past year, to be completely honest with you. We were a lot more organic focused, but we've had to shift to the paid social side. And unfortunately, that's just Facebook and Instagram. They're so popular that there's so many people and they have to find a way to, one, monetize it, but also get the content you need in front of the eyeballs. So that's how they figured it out. We have to leverage the paid social to see the conversion, see the return that we're looking for these days. With some of the other platforms, so maybe Snapchat, Instagram stories, there's lower barriers of entry there. So they don't require the paid side as much, but you can still advertise on all of those platforms. But I'd say it's important. And even if you can set aside a budget of $100 per month, it will go far in reaching that audience, retargeting the people that have hit your webpage, staying in front of them, again, in that authentic way. And kind of on that note, so I think that as a whole, marketing should be thought of comprehensively about every platform, every piece and content that you're putting out there. So you may have a weekly newsletter or biweekly or monthly, but if you can then in your newsletter highlight a great promotion you ran on Facebook or a really great article spotlight about one of your teammates, trying to link people to all of the places, serve those multiple impressions and get people through that funnel that you're trying to hit.
It makes so much sense. And we can nerd out on paid advertising for quite a while. So, delving down there. Yeah. I'm a big fan. I think it's huge. And I think that if you're going to own a business, there's definitely a time and a place to outsource things, but I also think that you have to have a really strong idea of what message needs to be put out there, because your marketing team that you outsource to, like, they're there to do as best they can, but you really understand your target audience better than anybody because you work with them day in and day out, right? So when we look at the paid side of things, so let's say we had that $100. So let's say there's a PT listening to this and they're like, okay, I can do $100 and I'll figure out how to do the let's say Facebook stuff, right? So would it be best for them to take that $100 and create a video and drive people towards that? Or would it be better for them to, you know, create a blog post and then take that $100 and try to drive people to their website, you know, via the paid ads?
I specifically Facebook right now will favor the video. So I think you'll see a great return on the video. I think initially, and kind of backtracking, so even outside of the content piece, brand awareness and the likes campaign and the impression type of campaigns that you can run on Facebook would be the best spend for that first maybe month one and two. So you want to build some credibility on this site and generate some likes and some traffic so that when people do start to hit your page, they're not looking at a Facebook page with 10 followers, because to be completely honest, they're going to bounce off. And like, you know, maybe they're not open, they're not reputable. So I would use that spend initially to generate some awareness and then start to worry more about the conversion piece. So maybe months 3 through 6 is when you start to drive traffic to the website, retarget people who have hit your website. And then in that piece, I think, and again, I couldn't put a blanket. My hunch is going to say video is going to perform really well because they favor video. But I do think, you know, maybe your target audience, if they're a little bit older, video seems like a burden to them and they'd rather just read an article. So the blog post may actually be better. So it's a little tough to, generalize. Well, but
I think that what you just said, like, that's a freaking golden nugget of, if you're starting a practice and you're right, if somebody goes to your Facebook page and you're spending all this money to get people there for whatever reason, you know, and you have 10 people that like your page, think of yourself, right? If you go somewhere and there's like nothing, it's just brand new. It's just, the more people that are there, the more credibility it is. And I think accidentally we did this early on, not knowing, in terms of like a Facebook like campaign. It's not like we had some sort of you know, like method behind it, like you just explained, but explain this brand awareness campaign. I think that'd be something that is fairly new. And is that something locally people can use targeting wise? Is just say, okay, I live here and within this square mileage, I want to make sure that our brand awareness is good and they'll just get in front of X amount of people per day.
Absolutely. So you can be extremely granular about who you're trying to target up to the area code. It's very geo-focused. You can get down to income level, purchasing habits. So yes, absolutely. And I think that's, again, going back to that customer personas, which is the very first step, is figuring out who you're trying to talk to. Because as you start to spend money on this, you want to know who you're trying to reach, as opposed to just throwing, you know, money at the wall and hoping something sticks. So with the brand awareness campaigns, absolutely that. You create a clever caption with a clever video or content piece, and then, you know, it gets in front of them to start to bring awareness to your company and your business page.
Facebook's amazing to me, and it's almost creepy how accurate you can be. You know, like, I was talking to my brother at this family reunion this summer, and I told him all about this stuff. He goes, Danny, like, that doesn't sound, Danny, doesn't sound legal, right? And I go, Sam, he lives in Baltimore. I go, dude, I can put a picture of my face with a caption that says, I told you so, in front of you when you go home, you know, next week. Because I know where you live, I know your age, I know what you're interested in. You know, I can target him that directly. And it's really crazy, but this kind of brings you back to what you were talking about the whole sitting down and understanding who your, you know, we call it our avatar, but our ideal patient is. Who's your ideal customer? And if you figure that out, then when you learn the other things that are a little more complex, like paid ads is not easy if you've never done it before. And you can lose a lot of money if you do it wrong. I mean, it's sort of like sometimes you have to learn lessons the hard way. But, you know, if you know who you're talking to, you'll have such a better return on your investment. So I love that. So if you guys are thinking about doing this, man, spend the time early on, you know, creating your strategy, create the avatar, get people to your page, and then try to, you know, re-engage with them. And you brought up retargeting or remarketing. So explain what that is real quick, because I think a lot of people know what it is, but don't necessarily know you can do this on social media.
Yeah, absolutely. So we can you can install a pixel on your webpage. You know, we can study this through Google Analytics, but also Facebook offers a pixel. And once it's installed, you can actually retarget or get in front of the people that have actually been to your website again through social media. So it's really powerful because they've expressed an interest in some way. There's a lot of a variety of ads that you can run. You can generate newsletter subscribers. You can try to get them to a certain landing page to capture information. There's a lot that you can do, but I think one of the more powerful is retargeting people that have already hit your site.
This is the creepy stuff where you look at a barbell and then you're on CNN, and then all of a sudden you keep seeing barbell ads and you're wondering, what the hell? Like, how do they know I looked at a barbell? This is how you do it. So, like, we can do this too. It's not necessarily like, you know, big companies. But yeah, I mean, it's what do they say? It takes something like 6 to 7 impressions or 6 to 7 times engaging with somebody before action is typically taken.
Yeah, I would love to hit on that a little bit. And I think I'm so thankful that you mentioned it. I think it's fascinating, the psychology behind that as a whole, but then also understanding that customer journey and how they articulate, like when you ask at the end, like, how did you hear about us? They may say, you know, Shan in Atlanta, but actually, you know, Shan in Atlanta may have just posted about it on Facebook, or I had liked a post that you had shared and it popped up in their newsfeed, or I had, you know, they had been served multiple ads before. So it's really fascinating to understand their journey. And it's difficult sometimes, I think, for people to articulate, which is why I stress don't give up on social media. It's hard for people to walk in somewhere and say, you know, I think I saw that Facebook post and then an Instagram a few days later, and I read a blog. Like, people don't talk like that. So there's so much value in staying in front of them and create, again, engaging pieces so that they do think of you when they are ready to take that next step.
That is so true. And I'll give you a good example. When I think about 8 months into opening our practice, we were heading back to Hawaii. I was teaching out there, so we had the whole family, and we're on Honolulu Airport getting on a bus to go get a rental car. And this guy is standing on the bus with me, and he just keeps looking at me. And it's like very odd, right? Like I don't know, is this guy like know me? Like, it's about to be a physical confrontation. Like, what the fuck is he looking at? And so he walks over and he goes, "Hey, are you Danny from Athlete's Potential?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "I've seen your videos on like lower back pain or something like that." And it was just this random like person from Hawaii that is, you know, in the airport that came up to me. And it just goes to show like the power of reach with some of this stuff and consistency. And also, if you have some content that actually helps people, like they remember that stuff, you know, and who knows, maybe that's like the one time he saw that, or maybe he saw multiple things and it, whatever it was, like he remembered enough to come up to me on a bus in Honolulu and tell me about it. You know, so the biggest mistake that you see businesses make, would you say that it's giving up on social media too early?
Absolutely. So people want that viral moment, the viral cat video that everyone,
Oh, cat videos crush it. I should put a cat in every video.
that'll get you there. But it does take at least 3 to 6 months to really start to understand what you're putting out there, what people are engaging with, what's working, what's not working, and start to track those metrics. So without that, I mean, you have very little data and, again, you haven't hit those people 7+ times. So they are not going to convert yet, and it can get frustrating. Yeah. But and there's so much value in just, I think, also being a thought leader in this space. So providing content with no expectation, I think there's some karma in that and some good vibes. But in theory, you know, if you're helping people, they're going to turn to you when they then have a problem they can't solve.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it, guys. This, you're probably gonna want to go back and re-listen to this one, because especially the last kind of few minutes of what we talked about with the Facebook stuff, that can make or break your business early on, 100%. If you do it correctly, you can set yourself up for success. And $100 in ad spend is, from a marketing standpoint, that is very, very little compared to what other forms of marketing can cost. So this is really, really good information. I've got two last questions for you. So number one, what is one book you would recommend that a business owner in our field, practitioner, or someone that is wanting to become a business owner, that they should read? One of your favorites.
Not social media related?
No, just like entrepreneur, you know, related. Like what, in terms of, man, it could be anything. Business is business. This book kills it. You should read it multiple times.
Oh, I have two.
Okay.
Do you mind?
I'm going to let it slide.
Okay, thanks. My go-to every time anyone asks, I will read this every year for the rest of my life, is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Awesome.
Great lessons. Second, we just read it as a team. It's called Hug Your Customers. And I think that some of the lessons that you learn in Hug Your Customers are completely applicable to social media and how you think through customer service. And again, kind of on the social media note, social media is an extension of your customer service. So keeping that in the forefront of your mind. And I really enjoyed the book, Hug Your Customers.
I love that, man. You should trademark that. Social media is an extension of your customer service. That's great. Okay, you're the app queen of our business forum. You got an app for everything, like anything under the sun. It's awesome. I learned so much whenever we get together, and you always have the latest and greatest stuff that's going to help me be more organized. So what's your favorite app to stay organized, your favorite thing?
To stay organized, I would say Teamwork. Have you heard of Teamwork?
I have not. What is that?
So specifically with organization, Teamwork is just a task system, if you will. So you can assign tasks to teammates, you can receive tasks, you can set them up as reoccurring. So in order for me to remember that I have to pay rent 3 months from now, I guess it's not ingrained in my brain, I use Teamwork to set up reoccurring things every 2 weeks or 2 days. It just helps me be able to jot it down in my phone, and then I can not have to think about it again. So I think organization-wise, Teamwork, what's also really great about it is template creation. So let's say you have a process when you bring on a new patient, you can create a series of tasks that are essentially a template of what you need, what you or a key staff member needs to do every time. And then you add it to your task list for the day, and it automatically gets assigned who needs to take responsibility for it. When is it due? If there are tasks that you cannot complete until someone else completes them, you can create, you know, that flow as well. So it's just helped as we grow and have a lot of process in place, to create these templates and then utilize them day to day.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Like just being able to you know, we use Slack, which is more of a communication channel, but this sounds different. Like being able to say, okay, this is a new patient, take them through the, you know, new patient, whatever sequence that we have, or discharge patient, take them through the discharge patient sequence, and then it tasks our office manager to do something, or us to email them to ask for a review, or whatever it is. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, it's very similar. Well, I think Infusionsoft's a little bit too complicated, to be honest. But it's essentially that. So you could say, okay, in 2 weeks after we discharge a patient, I want so-and-so in the office to follow up with that person. And it auto creates those based on the time that you set up that teamwork template. And so it just creates a really great cadence to hold a process accountable.
Yeah, that's great. Chantel, where can people learn more about you, what you're doing, you know, connect with you guys, if they're interested in, you know, maybe doing some work with Imagine, like, where can they find out more about you?
Well, thanks. Thanks for asking. Well, it would be silly if I didn't say social media. So you can follow us on all of the social media accounts at Imagine Media Consulting. Our website, imaginemediaconsulting.com. If you want to shoot me an email, it's S-H-A-N as in Nancy at imaginemediaconsulting.com. And I'd love to chat.
All right, great. Chantel, thank you so much for your time. Guys, this is the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Matei. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you learned a lot. And listen up. Next week, we got another great guest for you.